Today's shiur will be beginning on Daf Tzadi Beis Omid Aleph Maseches Bava Basra, the beginning of the sixth perek. We will proceed with reading the Mishnah and the Rashbam alongside with it, and that will serve as our introduction to the coming sugya. Hamocher peros lechavero. Person sells produce to his friend, and he sells it not with any prearranged purpose. In other words, he sells it stam. He doesn't say whether they are for planting or for eating. Vizoron, the buyer, bought the peros, bought the seeds, the produce, and planted the seeds. Velo tzamchu. And it didn't grow. V'afilu zera pishtan. Even pishtan, flax seeds, which are mostly purchased for planting purposes. It is true that a minority amount of the seeds are used for eating, but rove of the quantity of pishtan seeds are for planting. The Mishnah is telling us that even if it's that type of seed, then they were planted and they didn't grow, eino chayav bachar yusan. The seller is not duty bound. He's not obligated to compensate. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Zaroine Gino She'enon Ne'echolin, the seeds that are referred to by the term Zaroine Gino, these are seeds that are not eaten at all, not consumed at all. They are strictly for planting purposes. Chayov Bachriusan, the seller will have to compensate the buyer in the event that they don't grow. We're going to look at the Rashbam, the second line from the top. V'lo tzamchu, lo mibaya peros de'ika de'zovin lizria ve'ika de'zovin lachila. We don't have to tell you about those kind of seeds or fruits that some buy for planting, some buy for eating. Umotzi lemeimar, the seller can easily tell the buyer upon their being planted and not grow. He can say, the seller can say, Lachila mechartiv loch, the enkan mekachto is klal. I sold them for you with the intention that you were going to eat them, as a result of their many people buying them for consumption. That you decided to plant them and they didn't grow, that's not grounds for calling this a voided deal. Elo afilu zera pishtan, the roiv hapishtan hanikach boilom lizria koinem osoi. Even flax seeds, where we say rove of the majority of flax seeds that are purchased are for planting, dekevon deiko dezovinami lachila, since there are those that buy it for eating as well, albeit a minority of the quantity of seeds, kidamrinon luliva dekisna lekuscha, as the Gemara Nidorim says in reference to flax seeds, that they're used for kuscha, a certain type of dish. Eino chayav bachar yusan. The seller is not obligated to make good on the deal when they do not grow. The motzi lemeimar lachila mechartiv loch. The seller can say, I sold them to you with the intention of your eating them. Debemamona, and this is a very important point that the Rashbam mentions now, which serves as introduction to the Gemara. When you're dealing with financial matters, lo azlinon bosa ruba. Kiddush Shmuel. We don't follow the majority based on Shmuel's opinion, the Gemara, that will be seen in the Gemara. In fact, we'll notice that this is a controversial point, Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. V'davka zera pishtan, mishum dechozi lachila. The idea that we just expressed, that majority is not going to be the ruling factor, that is limited to this example of flax seeds. Avol, zaroni gina. If you're dealing with that type of seed, kagoyim zera kruv kaflut, kruv or kaflut seeds, different types of vegetation, she'enoi ne'echal klal. No one eats those. Someone bought zera kruv or kaflut, planted them and they didn't grow. Chayav bachar yusan, the seller is duty bound to compensate. Shirab Shimon Gamil Omer Zarone Chulei Hochi Meforish BeGemara. The Rashbam here is actually in presenting a commentary that's based on the Maskona, the end ruling of the Gemara. Sometimes this can confuse the student, because when you learn the Gemara itself, you have to go through a few steps in order to come to the conclusion that one already saw in the commentary on the Mishnah. Before we continue in the Gemara text itself, we are using the pre-marked edition, and we recommend printing out the daf before going further in the text. If you don't have the option of printing out the daf, then you can view it on your screen. The best option is to buy or acquire at nominal cost. At nominal cost, you can buy a personal copy of the Shas Ozer Bova Basra edition. With that having been said, we recommend you're looking at the title, topic heading of the sugya. On the outside margin in our marked Gemaras, we provide topic headings, and they're entitled by the term Nose, and when necessary, we also provide symbol explanations under the heading Mivneh, structural notes, describing what the geometric forms will be doing in that particular sugya. In this case, in our outside margin, we have Nosei Kloli, means a general topic heading. Ad Sadi Gimel Amid Beis, that means that the topic we'll be dealing with will cover two Daf Gemara. E Holchin B'Momoin Achar Horoiv, do we follow the majority in order to settle controversies of a financial nature? Machlokes Rav Shmuel. This topic is a machlokes, is a controversy between these two opinions. In addition to our general heading, the topic at hand is under the title Nosei, Hamocher Shor Lechavero V'Nimtza Nakhon. A fellow sold an ox to a customer, and lo and behold, it turned out to be a goring ox. Let's start the Gemara text. Itmar, Hamocher Shor Lechavero V'Nimtza Nakhon. An ox was sold to a customer, and it turned out to be a goring creature. The Rashbam points out that the reason this discussion appears over here is because later in the Gemara, as part of the discussion, there will be a citation from our Mishnah. So, we have a goring ox in the possession of the customer. Rav Omar Harei Ze Mekachtos. According to Rav, the deal can be called off. This is a deal made under mistaken circumstances. Ushmuel Omar Yochol Lo Marlo. The seller can say, L'shchita Machartiv Loch. I sold it to you for the purposes of slaughter, namely for its meat value. Before we continue in the Gemara, we notice a geometric form. We call it the volcano form. In the marking system, geometric forms have no inherent significance. All they do is create a sense of series of items, whereby one is expected to find a connection between the different points that are surrounded by a geometric form. We try to explain the role of each form as they appear by notes on the outside margin. In this case, we have the Mivneh, and it says under the volcano form, Shlavim, stages, Levarer, to clarify, Loma v'alma cholkim Rav u'Shmuel, why and under what circumstances are Rav and Shmuel arguing. The Gemara continues, Amai. Why does there have to be this controversy? The lechzi e gavra dezovin lenach sosa. Let us see who the customer is. If it's a butcher who bought the ox, as opposed to a farmer. So it's clear that he bought it for slaughter purposes, and hence there would be no mekachtos. So what? It's, if it's goring, he's a person that is going to slaughter it anyway. E l'radya, if the person that came in is a farmer and he bought it for plowing, l'radya, then it was purchased for plowing, and then it would be clearly a mekachtos. The Gemara answers, the machlokes Rav and Shmuel concerns a person that buys for both purposes. Begavra dezavin lahachi ulahachi. He buys for both purposes, and therefore we can't come to a clear conclusion based on his identity. The Gemara asks, but still, velechzi domi hechininu. Let us see the amount that was paid. One can assume that an ox that one purchased for plowing is more costly than one that was bought for its meat value. And if he paid a large amount of money, then it's clear that he intended it for plowing, and hence, if it turns out to be goring, he should be able to call off the deal. Lo tzricha. The Gemara responds that the machlokas Rav and Shmuel is under the following circumstances. The Iker Bisra v'kom bidmei radya, where meat became expensive, and the meat value and the plowing value are one and the same. So what do we have? We have a fellow who bought an ox whose value doesn't really matter whether it's for meat or for goring. So he has an ox with a specific value in his possession. Ihochi lemai nafkamina. If that be the case, so then what's the issue? What difference does it make? We can't say here that the customer was ripped off. He got his money value. He paid for an ox, and we're saying it doesn't matter whether it was for meat purposes or plowing purposes. It has the same value. The Gemara answers, there is a practical bearing. Nafgamino letircha. The Rashbam, at the bottom of the page, letircha. Tircha means to be troubled. Torach mechiras hashor leshachto velimkor habosor. The Torah that's involved, the trouble that's involved with selling a goring ox to have it slaughtered and then to sell the meat, and after all of that, then you recover your value. But it involves trouble. Hilkoch Omar Rav Hareze Mekachtois V'Yachsir Lo Hamocher Domov. And as a result of that, the Rav claims that the buyer can say, hey, listen, I didn't intend to buy an ox that, in order to realize the value I paid, I have to go through the trouble of selling it, having it slaughtered, and then seeing to it that the meat gets sold. Hechi domi. The question here we have to define, and we're going to do it with the aid of the Rashbam. He says at the bottom, Hechi domi dehavi mekach tos l'schayev hamochir l'hachzir adomim. What are the circumstances that we're going to possibly call the deal a mekachtos, a mistaken deal, to obligate the seller to restore the cash? It seems from the case at hand that Rav claiming that the deal can be called off, what in effect is taking place? The buyer says, I don't like this deal. I don't like having this goring ox. I want you to give me my money back. So what are the circumstances? E deleka lishtalume mine, if there is no possibility of getting cash from the seller, he doesn't have any cash. So you have a disconcerted purchaser who realizes that he's got a goring ox as far as objective value. No rip-off took place, but he wants his money back. But at the same time, if we're talking about a situation where he knows he can't get his cash back, le'akev tura bezuze, let him just hold on to the ox in lieu of the money. The Amri Inshi, as people say, min morei reshusach, from those who owe you money, and you want to collect from them, porei ephra, take from them even suban, even bran. The idea being that when you're trying to collect owed money, be happy with whatever you can get. And if you see the fellow that owes you money doesn't have cash to pay you, so just, in this case, hold on to the animal. So why is it that Rav says that this is a mekaptos and the buyer can give back the ox and then get his money? How is that? Lo tzricha. The case is necessary. De'ika lishtalume minei. Where the seller does have cash to pay back. So we have a fellow bought a goring ox, was unhappy with that, didn't want to get involved with the tircha of having it slaughtered and sold, and we saw Machlokas, Rav, and Shmuel, and we're talking about circumstances where the seller has money to refund. Rav, Omar Hareze Mekachtos. Rav says that this deal can be called off. Bosser Ruba Azlinon. We follow Rove sales. The Ruba Laradio Zavni. Rove, the majority of ox sales are sales for plowing purposes. As such, you got a goring ox, clearly not fit for plowing purposes. And the fellow in question, we know, is a type of person that buys for both purposes. He doesn't want to have the trouble, and he can say, I'm part of the rove. I'm part of the majority. The majority buy for plowing, and this ox is useless as a plowing creature. Ushmuel Omar Loch, ki azlinon boser ruba. Under what circumstances do we follow the principle of majority, that majority settles issues? Be'isura. That's when you're dealing with matters of prohibited items. The classic case, which we're not going to discuss in detail right now, we'll just make mention of it, is a situation where you have some meat that's found outside a row of butcher shops. And we know that 9 of the butcher shops sell kosher meat and 1 sells unkosher meat. And you found meat outside the shops and you don't know from where it came. So we say, you follow the majority. And since the majority of shops sell kosher meat, you can take the meat and eat it. That's the idea of following Rove and Isur. However, b'mamona lo, Rav Shmuel's opinion, when it comes to matters of finances, financial controversies, we do not follow the Rove. In other words, the Rove, the majority, is not the deciding factor. Before going on, we didn't give introduction to the markings that you see, even though they are fairly obvious. Nevertheless, we can glance at the outside margin and see what the role of the double underlining and the circling was. The Mivneh note at the outside margin has featured the circle and the double underline. Double underlines in the marking system serve the same role as geometric forms, whereby they are designed to create a series or connection function. So we've noted in the note outside margin, Havlotas Machlekes Rav Shmuel, the circling of the names was to highlight the fact that they have a controversy concerning Iazlinan B'momon Boser Rov. Do we follow the Rov, the majority, when it comes to financial matters? So we have double underline on the fourth line from the top, Boser Ruba, indicating Rav's opinion, we do follow the majority to settle controversies in financial matters. And we also double underline B'mamono Lo under Shmuel's name, where he says financial matters, we don't follow the Rov. It's noteworthy, of course, that there's a posuk in the Torah that says Acharei Rabim Lahatos, that one should follow the majority. What we're discussing now is, when does that principle apply? As we go on in the Gemara, there is a new geometric form that appears. We see a triangle. And in order to understand its role, we take advantage of the note on the outside margin. The triangle, with a point positioned upwards, Kushos al Rav. They serve as questions on Rav. And if you notice any triangles with the point downwards, and you actually can, if you have the page up on your screen, you'll notice toward the lower part of the page an inverted triangle with the point downwards. The note on the outside margin says Kushyo al Shmuel. This is a question on Shmuel. In fact, as far as the sugya is concerned, it goes on to Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph. So if you have the option, you can scroll over right now to Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph, and you'll notice more triangles. They are all pointing upwards, indicating that the row, if you will, of the triangles are questions on Rav. Let's continue in the Gemara. Meisvei. We're now going to present the source. The result of this immediate discussion should be a kasha on Rav, where we will see the situation we don't follow the Rav. The source begins in our marking system. The sources, namely Tanaic sources, whether they be Mishnayos or Brises or restatements thereof, are featured in a frame. And this is to set it off or distinguish it from the Gemara text. So we bring a source, Ha'isha She Nis'almana Oy Nisgarsha, a woman who became a widow or was divorced. A woman in her married state has a ksuba. That is a certain financial obligation that a husband has toward his wife, whereupon the dissolution of the marriage, whether it be through widowhood or divorce, the woman is entitled to collect a certain amount of money. The basic ksuva is as follows. If she was married as a besula, namely she was a girl that was never married before, and this is her first marriage experience, she's entitled to a ksuba of 200 zuz. If she married this man as a widow, namely it's her second marriage, or as a woman that had a previous marriage experience, then she is entitled to a ksuba of 100 zuz. So we have a woman that recently became either a widow or was divorced, v'hi omeres besula nisesi, and she claims that she was married as a mesula, meaning for her it was her first marriage, first time marriage, and as such is entitled to a ksuba of 200. V'hu omer, the husband or his descendants, his heirs, claim, lo ki ela almona nisesich, I married you as a widow. You were already a widow. Hence, you're entitled to a ksuba of only 100. Im yesh edim shiotza behinuma v'roisha perua, if there are witnesses that can tell us about her marriage to this man, that she went out, namely she entered her marriage with a hinuma, a marriage veil, and her hair was uncovered, this is indicative of a besula marriage, of a first-time marriage for the woman, and hence ksubasa masayim. She's entitled to a ksuba of 200. So, once again, what is it that entitles her to the ksuba of 200 if she can produce these witnesses? The Gemara points out, taimo de'ika edim. The reason she gets the 200 is because she has witnesses. Ha leka edim, in the event that she would not be able to produce witnesses telling us these details, lo, she would not be entitled to the 200. Ve'amai, why not? Lema, why not say, haloch acha roiv hanoshim? Why not follow the majority of women and their marriages? V'roiv noshim besulos nisos. The majority of women get married as first-time marriages. So, in the case of a controversy between the man and the woman, and she's claiming she was married as a besula, she's really saying she was part of the majority of marriage cases. And yet we see that that doesn't help. The only way for her to get the 200 is to produce witnesses. In other words, from this discussion we see that we do not follow the rov, and this is a matter of finance. That being said, Rav is presented with a difficulty. The Gemara is going to respond, Omar Ravina. Ravina will answer this. He'll answer why this case is different, why we can say in general we do follow the Rav, and why over here there's a technical problem or a local problem in this case. Let us just point out that as we go to the answer section of the Gemara, the response on behalf of Rav, We're going to encounter a section of Gemara that is enclosed in brackets. And our policy is that when encountering a bracketed section, we recommend, more often than not, we recommend to skip the bracketed section during the initial reading in order to preserve the simple flow of reading. In this case, as you can see in the Gemara, there are brackets that appear on the next line in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam commentary, namely to the left-hand side of the Gemara text itself, there's a vertical dash dotted line. This indicates the length of the bracketed section. If you look at the ends of this particular dashed line, at the beginning and the end, you'll notice brackets in the middle of those lines. And the bracketed section is accompanied by a note on the inside margin. Let's take a look at the inside margin now to understand why, when we read the Gemara, we're going to skip first. So, Grayim Elu, the note says, these brackets, Haim, Lashem, Dilug, their purpose is for skipping. Chuvas Ravina, Beloshon Metukan, Mofia Acharei HaSograyim. Ravina's response to the question on Rav really appears after the bracketed section. It appears in its corrected form. B'soich HaSograyim HaGemora Makshe Kushya Al HaNisayon HaRishon LaNos Tshuva. In the bracketed section, the Gemara is going to raise a question on our initial attempt to provide an answer. Hence, the initial attempt to provide an answer will be inaccurate. So what we're going to do in presenting the Gemara is first read the correct answer. The question having been asked, we see from the previous discussion that we don't follow the Rov, and that's a problem for Rav. And we're going to now read the Gemara giving an answer on behalf of Rav with a skipping. Omar Ravina, Mishum di'iko lememar, roiv hanisois besulos, yesh lohen koil. It is because it can be said that the majority of those girls that marry as first-time marriages, as basula marriages, there is public knowledge to that effect. That's the term koil means there literally there is a voice, but for our purposes means people speak about it. It's public knowledge. The zoo, the woman featured in the Tanaic source, Koil v'ein la koil, since we don't hear any koil concerning her, there isn't any public discussion, public acknowledgement of her having been a basula. Isra la ruba, her rove, in other words, the majority factor that should operate on her behalf, doesn't. It's weakened. Isra, it's weakened. Why is it weakened? Because when we speak about the majority of girls being first-time marriages, part of that majority is the fact that most of them have a koil attached to it. If she doesn't have a koil attached to her, so we cannot consider her part of that rove, part of that majority. Let's go over the Gemara now, realizing that the coming lines are going to be thwart with difficulty, and the Gemara will point it out. There will appear in the text a little aleph and a little beis. The aleph and beis provide a sense of stages, the aleph being the first attempt to present an answer that will meet with difficulty, and the beis, as we saw, was the final answer. So, reading the Gemara again with the bracketed section, Omar Avino, Mishum di'iko lememar, the reason that we don't follow the rove over here, even though in general we do, because over here, roiv noshim besulos nisos umiut almonos, true, majority of women get married as first-time marriages, and a minority as almonos, as widows, v'chol hanises besulo yesh la koil. And we've emphasized the word v'chol, meaning every single besula marriage has a koil attached to it, has public speaking, public knowledge, public murmurings that accompany the besula marriage. V'zu, the woman in question in our Tanaic source, hoil v'ein la koil, since she does not have a koil describing that she too was a basula, that she too was a first time marriage, Isra la ruba, it weakens her chance as being part of the rov, as being part of that majority. The Gemara asks, E kol hanisois basulos yesh lahen kol, if that's a fact, that every single first time marriage woman has an accompanying koil, accompanying public discussion surrounding her. And now, what kind of woman do we have here according to this attempt? We have a woman that does not have the koil. Well, if she does not have a koil, then she was not a basula, because you got finished telling us that every single basula woman has a koil attesting to the fact that she was a basula. If she doesn't have a koil, then as far as we're concerned, she was not a basula. Ki ika edim. In the event that witnesses show up that tell us that she came forth with a veil, my have a so what? Midalesla koil, by the fact that the public murmuring, the public knowledge is lacking. Sahadi shakri ninu. These are obviously lying witnesses. Sahadi are witnesses, shakri lying. If that be the case, why does the source say that if witnesses tell us that she went forth as a first-time marriage by their description of the veil, why does she get the 200? She should not be entitled to the 200. She's lacking that element, namely the koil, which accompanies every single basula marriage. Ella, rather, it's necessary to restate the facts. The source told us that witnesses will help. Ah, but what about the koil? Ella roiv hanisois basulos yesh lahen koil. The majority of first-time marriage women have the public murmurings that accompany that. The woman in our source above, who was arguing with her former husband, hoil the ain lo koil, since she doesn't have the public koil that accompanies her, isra lo ruba, it weakens her being associated with the rove. But there are a minority of women that are basulos that get married and there is no koil with them. Hence, if witnesses show up and confirm that she was a basula, she'll still be entitled to the 200. However, the main point emphasizes as follows. As far as Rav is concerned, we follow the rove in financial controversies. In the case at hand with the woman, we have emphasized in our explanation and in the markings, Isra la ruba, her rove has been weakened. So she doesn't have the benefit of attaching herself to the rove because there was no koil that accompanied her marriage. The Gemara continues with another toshma surrounded by an inverted triangle. We noted before that the inverted triangle actually serves as a kasha on Shmuel. What was Shmuel's position? That in Momon, we do not follow the rove. That in financial matters, if there's a controversy, we do not follow the majority to settle it. Toshma. We present another Tanaic source, as you can see, it has a frame around it, and we can already anticipate that the thrust of the Gemara is to show a source that indicates we do follow the rove. Hamocher eved l'chavero. One is selling a slave to his friend, a customer. V'nimtza, and it turns out, ganav o kavyustus, that the newly purchased slave is a thief or a kidnapper. Higio, the sale cannot be called off. There's no mekaptos. The Seifa says, liste mezuyon, oi muchtav lamalchus, if it turns out that the slave that he just bought is an armed bandit that would murder people, or he's a fellow who's been sentenced to death by the government, and the customer now, after buying the slave, becomes aware of this, omer lo harei shelcha lefanecha. The sale is said to be as follows. Take your slave back. Take him In the Reisha, we saw that the sale goes through, it can't be called off. Reisha, my taima, why is it that it's not a mekav tos? Lav mishum deruba hachi isnu. Is it not so that rove slaves, the majority of slaves, are in fact thieves? So when you bought this guy, you should have been aware that he is that, and you cannot call it off. The Rashbam, second line from the top, says, Lav mishum deruba avdi hochi isnu, ganovim o kav yustasin, that rove of them are thieves or kidnappers. Ludas kein kono halokeach. And the purchaser bought it understanding that. Ukami shekiva olav domi. It's as if he formally accepted it. Alma b'mamona azimah basaruba v'kashi l'shmuel. And this is a difficulty for Shmuel. The Gemara responds in defense of Shmuel. It says, lo, kuhu hachi isnehu. It's not so that only a majority are like that, but rather they are all like that. And as such, the Rashbam says, a few lines down, there's a dot, there's a dashed underlined section in the Rashbam, Ukaman di omar le mocher behedya domi. It's as if the mocher said explicitly, I'm selling you this guy that you know is a thief. Shere yodea lokeach shu ganav. Because they are all like that. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.